Chapter 75, John Calvin, Part 2, First Genevan Ministry. When, in 1531, Zwingli was killed in the bloody battle at Capel, close to Zurich, it seemed as if the Reformation in Switzerland would perish. However, in God's counsel, it had been decreed otherwise. Although the enemies of the Reformation rejoiced, yet they rejoiced too soon. The light of the truth would shine again, and even brighter upon Switzerland's soil. However, for that we go in our thoughts to the western border of Switzerland. There, on the beautiful Lake of Geneva, the city of Geneva is situated. In those days, Geneva was a city of about 12,000 inhabitants. Geneva is a very ancient city. From the historical records, it appears that Geneva existed already before the Christian era, hence before Christ's coming upon the earth. In the days of Charlemagne, the city already had its own independent territory. After the death of that monarch, his powerful empire fell apart. Yet, during those dark, confused days, Geneva maintained its independence and was governed by bishops. Several centuries later, the Duke of Savoy wanted to take possession of that city. Savoy is situated to the south of Geneva in the western Alps of France's eastern border. However, the citizens of Geneva did not give up their liberty. A long and often bloody struggle developed. That grim struggle was waged with alternating successes. At one time, the troops of the Duke of Savoy gained the victory. Then again, the citizens of Geneva. If we wanted to tell you that entire struggle, then we would become too copious, and that is not necessary for our purpose. However, in spite of the rage of the Duke of Savoy, Geneva continued to preserve its independence. In 1532, the city of Bern sent a few reformative preachers to the city of Geneva. With reformative preachers, I mean Protestant preachers. The most prominent were William Farrell and Viret. As a consequence of that, a spiritual struggle was kindled in Geneva, a conflict between the light of the Reformation and the darkness of Rome's false doctrines. The Prince of Darkness exerted all his powers to prevent that and to check the coming of the Reformation in Geneva. The struggle was difficult and severe. William Farrell. Let us briefly tell you who he was. He was an exceptional, zealous preacher and very fervent in spirit. He was born in France in 1489. He was a fervent Roman Catholic in his youth, but like Calvin, he was instructed out of the Holy Scriptures, and God blessed that instruction to his heart. God's Spirit opened his eyes for the darkness of the errors of the Roman Catholic Church. God glorified his grace in the heart of William Farrell. Then he no longer could keep silent about the light of God's grace which had arisen in his heart, and being fervent in spirit, he attacked Rome vehemently. Since the persecution raged in France, it was not long before his life was threatened. For that reason, he fled to Switzerland. With enthusiasm and full of fire, he preached the gospel in various Swiss towns. That preaching did not remain without a blessing. Well then, as we already wrote, that man, in company of some other preachers, among whom was Viret, was sent to Geneva in 1532. In Geneva, those men joined issue with the errors of Rome. As you may imagine, the opposition was very vehement. Rome used all means for that. For instance, here follows an incident how that struggle was waged by Rome. A Roman Catholic servant girl stirred poison in the soup which those preachers were to eat. Only Virette, and happily not much, ate of that, and he became seriously ill. Farrell was prevented from being home on time, and in that way he escaped death by poisoning. Although Virette recovered after a long sickness, yet his health had received a severe blow. Henceforth, even until his death, he remained a weak man. Yet their enemies had no pleasure of their base work. The Roman Catholic servant girl, whom they used to obtain their purpose, was punished with death. Besides, their crafty plan did not succeed, and the desired object was not attained. Happily, none of the Protestant preachers died of it. With this, Rome reached the opposite from what it wanted to reach, because through this criminal act, the people of Geneva turned themselves more and more against them. With this, it lost its influence. The condition in the city itself was terrible. The Roman Catholic clergy lived in the most shameful sins. This concerned not only the lower clergy, but also the higher ones, yea, even the bishop set a bad example. Besides this, a large group of people lived in Geneva who lived on indifferently and shamelessly committed sin. That was the liberal party, or the libertines. Drinking parties and revelries were held till late in the night. Then the nocturnal stillness was often rudely disturbed by the shouting of drunken men and women. In a word, we can safely say that Satan had set up his throne in Geneva. His realm reigned supreme there. The Protestant preachers, Farrell and Virette and others, waged a hard struggle against that. With tooth and nail, the Roman Catholic clergymen resisted the labor of those preachers and opposed them in all possible ways. But also the libertines would not listen to the serious preaching of these faithful ministers. Farrell reproved them sharply about their sins and wicked life, and demanded that they should repent and forsake their offensive life. In spite of all opposition, the Reformation slowly on gained ground, and in August of the year 1535, the Reformation was established by the government of Geneva. The papacy was abolished and the Mass forbidden. That was a severe defeat for the Roman Catholic Church. Yet with this, the struggle in Geneva was far from finished, because the libertines incited the people against the Protestant preachers. It is true, the Council of Geneva cooperated. Various laws to check sin were promulgated by the government. Blasphemy was made punishable. The playing of cards and dice was forbidden. When there was preaching in the city, no liquor was permitted to be sold in the taverns. After 9 o'clock in the evening, no strong drink was permitted to be sold. They were all good things. Would that it was also that way in our country. A few months later, a law was passed which specified that the stores had to remain closed on Sunday. All citizens of the city were in duty bound to go to church and attend the services. Whoever purposely and without lawful reasons neglected that and remained at home was fined. All that was very nice, but the people of Geneva, being instigated by the libertines, resented that. For the most part, they did not want to be tied down in this way. They wanted liberty and retain their wicked life. Severe, very severe, was the spiritual war which was being waged. Pharaoh felt the enmity and the hatred of the people. In everything, he noticed the secret opposition and underground resistance. Oh, he felt it. He could not cope with it, and he besought God for help. O Lord, send thou a man who is stronger than I. Thus he prayed, day after day, at the throne of grace. And that prayer was answered by the Lord. Help would come. The man who would be used by the Lord as a means in his hand and to set bounds to the wickedness in Geneva was already on the way. The name of that man was John Calvin. In the former chapter, we wrote already that Calvin wandered a lot after his flight from Paris. First, he went to Basel, where he completed the institutes. There, he was comparatively safe. But yet, he also left that city again. In the winter of 1535, he wandered through Italy. The Duchess of Renata of Ferrara lived there. She was a sister of the French King Francis I. Her brother was a fierce persecutor of the Protestants, but she was favorably inclined toward the Reformation. For some time, Calvin lodged as guest at her castle. There the weary wanderer finds a brief rest. I purposely write brief, because the Roman Inquisition finds out that Calvin has found a shelter with her. The Pope warns her husband, the Duke of Ferrara, who is a strict Roman Catholic, and Calvin must again flee hastily to save his life. Some writers tell us that during that flight he was captured by the Inquisition, but was liberated by disguised horsemen who had been sent by Renata. Cannot be said with certainty that this is based upon truth. It is true that the Duchess was forced to turn Catholic again. Even her children were taken from her. How cruel Rome is, isn't that so? For the sake of form, she was returned to the Roman Catholic Church, but this was not done wholeheartedly, because she corresponded with Calvin until her death. However, through this, Calvin had lost his hiding place again, and again he wandered about as a chaste one. During his wanderings, he has also visited the Waldenses, who had still maintained themselves in the valleys of the Western Alps. He has preached among them. Even till this day, a hill is called the Calvin Hill. However, all this cannot be told in detail. Once more, he has been in France itself to settle some family affairs. However, he is betrayed to the Inquisition, and again he is compelled to flee. Now he decides to travel back to the city of Basel again. There he is safe. There he can rest from the many hardships, and besides, in that city he can study quietly. On that journey from France to Basel, he lodges one night in Geneva, and that one night is decisive for the rest of his life. How crystal clear the providence of God is observed in this. He governs and directs the life of rulers and people, but also of every person personally. Calvin had to take that way through the city of Geneva, because in that city a man wrestled with God for help. That man was William Farrell, isn't that so? There God ordered the field of labor for Calvin. In our thought, we see Calvin sitting that evening in his room of that inn where he shall lodge that night. Only one night, Early the next morning he shall depart again to travel further to Basel. What was he thinking about that evening, while sitting all alone in his room? God alone knows that. How much that young man of 27 years had experienced already in his short life. How often death has been close to him. How often, as if through the eye of a needle, he has escaped the grasping hands of his fanatical persecutors. But hitherto the Lord has always preserved and protected him. Did he think about those miraculous leadings and preservations of God that evening? We do not know. Suddenly he is startled up out of his musing. Someone knocks, and a moment later a man unknown to him enters his room. That man is Farrell, the courageous preacher from Geneva. Farrell had heard that the author of the renowned book, The Institutes, was in the city. Immediately he has made his decision. He shall visit Calvin in his hotel. That is just the man he needs. That is the man that must help and assist him in the severe struggle against the libertines. He hastens through the dark streets of Geneva to the place where Calvin is lodging. A moment later, he enters the room of Calvin, and soon both men are engaged in a serious conversation. Farrell, who is 20 years older than Calvin, tells him how conditions are in Geneva. He tells him about the victory which has been won because the government has introduced the Reformation. He tells Calvin about the measures which have been taken to check the licentiousness in Geneva. But he also tells him about the resistance which the libertines put up against those various laws. He sketches to him the severe struggle which is being fought. Finally, he asks him kindly but urgently to remain in Geneva. Oh, Calvin must assist him in that fierce struggle. But the youthful Calvin shakes his head decidedly. Oh, no, he does not think about that. Early the next morning, he shall leave Geneva again. He is traveling to Basel. There he shall find the rest which he needs so much. There he shall be able to study. Besides, he is much too young to perform that labor in Geneva. He is not competent for that at all. However, Farrell does not lose courage. Please, do stay here. We cannot do without you. God's church in this city needs you. It is essential that you remain. Thus he at last asks, yea, pleads with the youthful Calvin in order to persuade him not to continue his journey to Basel. However, Calvin shakes his head decidedly and remains deaf to the pleading of the much older Farrell. No, I won't do it. I want to go to Basel, and I am going to Basel. Farrell continues to persevere for hours, but Calvin remains unyielding. Whatever Farrell tries, whatever reasons he advances, it is of no avail. Finally, Farrell gets up, a tired, sad, but also a grim expression covers his furrowed face. He places himself directly in front of Calvin, looks at him with sparkling, piercing eyes, and speaks with a solemn voice. Do you refuse to offer your help to the Church of Christ in Geneva? Do you want rest and devote yourself to your study? Very well. Then I tell you in the name of Almighty God that you do not seek the cause of Jesus Christ, but that you seek yourself. But your rest and study shall be cursed by God. Farrell speaks these last words to Calvin in a heated tone. Then he turns around and goes away. His heart cries within him. As a result of these most serious words of Farrell, Calvin has turned deathly pale. For a moment, as one crushed, he sits motionless in his chair. Your rest and your studies shall be cursed by God. Those terrible words still roar in his ears. He trembles over his entire body and wipes the clammy sweat from his forehead. He arises staggeringly and calls Farrell back. The departing preacher turns around immediately, retraces his steps, and asks in astonishment what Calvin desires. He answers with a soft, quivering voice that he no longer dares to refuse and shall remain in Geneva. He shall not pursue his journey to Basel. A broad smile suddenly brightens the face of Farrell. He extends his hand cordially and firmly presses the hand of Calvin. Good night, my young friend. We shall speak further tomorrow. Again, he goes away. It jubilates within his heart. And when in this late hour he hastens homeward through the deserted streets, yet he nevertheless casts his moist eyes heavenward to thank the Almighty. Now, an altogether different life commences for Calvin. At first, his work consisted in explaining a portion of the Holy Scriptures. Every day he conducted those Bible readings before a large multitude. Nothing was even said about his salary, and Calvin, who was modest of character, did not ask for it. Not until after 5 months did the Council of Geneva give him a small present. That was really a shame, because the laborer is worthy of his hire. Calvin did not place himself in the foreground, and yet actually he became the leader of the Reformation in Geneva. That happened because the Lord had given him exceptional gifts and talents, spiritual talents. At one time, a religious dialogue was held in Lucerne, a small place close to Geneva. Farrell and Virette were also present. The first days, Calvin did not say one word and just listened. He modestly kept himself in the background, more so because he had been active such a short time in Geneva. Farrell acted mostly as spokesman. The Roman Catholic clergy, who were also present and who were not threatened with prison and stake, vehemently combated the doctrine of the Reformation. Farrell served them with a reply. Thus it went on back and forth until a Roman Catholic clergyman arose and upbraided Farrell that he ignored the church fathers. Before Farrell could answer, the youthful Calvin suddenly arose and proved to them out of the ancient church fathers that not the Protestants, but just the Roman Catholics distorted the doctrine of those church fathers. Entire portions from the sermons by Chrysostom and Augustine, about whom we told you in the early part of this church history, he repeated from memory and cast them into the face of those Roman Catholic clergymen, and in them entire Rome, that they should read the church fathers better, then it would be evident who was right. Friend and foe stared at him with open mouth. Both parties were dumbfounded by the able consciousness and certainty wherewith this young man handled the difficult church fathers. Therefore, the impression of Calvin's words was tremendous, who after this sat down again and acted as if nothing had happened. They had not expected that from that young preacher. The Roman Catholics could no longer say anything to defend themselves and sat down ashamed. Perhaps they themselves did not know those church fathers. The result of this was that the Reformation was established in Lucerne. However, a greater blessing rested upon that religious dialogue. Within 3 months, 80 monks and 120 priests had changed over to the Reformation. What a rich blessing, isn't that so? With one blow, Calvin had become famous. That was not his intention at all, but God gave him grace and honor. However, because of his success, he did not become proud in the least. Yet the struggle in Geneva was by far not finished. Calvin had to struggle through severe, difficult years in Geneva. But however great the opposition became, he did not yield one inch, but stood firm because it concerned God's honor. Who shall win this struggle? On the 25th of April of the year 1538, three men leave the city of Geneva. They are Farel and Calvin, the two Protestant preachers who labored and preached in Geneva. In their midst, supported by them, walks another preacher, an aged blind man. Where are they going? And why are they leaving the city of Geneva? They must leave the city because the government has banished them. What? Banished? How is that possible? That is a sad story. It would be impossible to tell everything about that. We shall merely tell you briefly something about the main points. We saw already in the first part of this chapter that various laws have been made in Geneva to restrain the wickedness which prevailed. Blasphemy, playing cards, dice, and many other sinful amusements were forbidden. Calvin also introduced a strict church discipline. Various articles about the administration of the church were established. The Lord's Supper would be administered once a month. But those who made themselves guilty of offensive sins were prohibited from approaching the Lord's Supper. That was perfectly normal and is also maintained in our Protestant churches. This may not be otherwise because then the table of the Lord would be desecrated and God's wrath would be roused against the entire congregation. Calvin demanded that the church discipline would be exercised by the church itself and not by the civil authorities. He was also perfectly right in that. We told you before already that state and church each have their own province and their own task. They must not stand above each other, but next to each other because they can assist and support each other. The state must not interfere with pure church matters. For that reason, Calvin demanded that the church discipline should be exercised by the church itself. That church discipline was strictly enforced. Allow me to mention a few instances. A member of the congregation had a gambling house, and he was punished for that. Another had sworn a false oath, and of course he likewise was punished. A third one lived in great sins. A fourth, thus I could go on. Calvin was strict, but it had to be in Geneva. Many of the population opposed these measures. They did not want to forsake their wicked life. They wanted liberty to sin. The libertines made satirical rhymes about Farel and Calvin, which were sung publicly. The resentment increased against the faithful preachers. In February 1538, a new administration had to be voted for. At that election, the Libertines gained a great victory. The majority of the new city council consisted of Libertines, those fierce enemies and opposers of Calvin and Farel. You can realize that now it became difficult for the evangelical preachers in Geneva to fulfill their task. They were thwarted everywhere. The formerly promulgated laws were made light of, or they were retracted. The drinking parties and revelries and other wicked feasts lasted till far in the night. Wickedness rose to a climax. Thus, Easter drew near. The Council of Geneva commanded that on that day, Holy Communion must be served in the churches. But the preachers positively refused to do that. What? Serve communion under such conditions? No thought of that. In that way, the table of the Lord would be shamefully desecrated. That could and might not be done. The night before Easter was very tumultuous in Geneva. Unceasingly, they knocked upon the windows of the homes of the faithful preachers. Rude voices rent the stillness every moment. They cried out, "Cast the traitor into the Rhone." With that traitor, they intended Calvin. He had not slept one moment that night. That was made impossible for him by those troublemakers. The next morning, Easter morning, the preachers did go to the church, although they had been forbidden by the council. Surrounded by friends who had armed themselves, they ascended the pulpit. Both of them preached that morning. They preached, Calvin as well as Farel, a serious penitential sermon, but they did not serve communion. Again, that could not be done under those circumstances. On that happy feast day, the commemorative day of Christ's resurrection, sad events took place in Geneva. Confusion prevailed in the city. Clamor and confusion prevailed even in the churches. They yelled and threatened, but Calvin and Farel did not yield one inch. The Libertines did not get their own way. 2 days later, the preachers were notified by the council that they must leave the city. They were banished. And thus, on the 25th of April, in the year 1538, we see them go out through the gates of the city. They turn their backs upon Geneva. Farel went to Neuchâtel, a city which is situated to the north of Geneva. There he remained preacher till his death. Calvin traveled to Basel with the object to go and study peacefully. Ever further, the preachers moved away from the city. Finally, they disappeared from sight. The Libertines rejoiced. And the devil celebrated too. It seemed as if the work of the Lord in Geneva was lost. It seemed as if the devil had gained the victory. And yet...